Let's have a nice cup of TRE in the afternoon with Hannah Murray.
Joining us on the line now is Joe Tucker, who originally trained as an animation director before becoming a television scriptwriter. His new book, The Secret Painter, is a true story about his uncle Eric, a seemingly unremarkable man who had an extraordinary hidden life as an accomplished painter. Unknown to many until his death, that behind closed doors, Eric had amassed over 500 of his own remarkable paintings. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Thank you for having me, Hannah.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. What an amazing story this is. I was reading through it and just thought, wow, I have so many questions. So tell us about your Uncle Eric, first of all. What was he like?
Well, he was a fascinating character. He was a very, in many ways, from the outside, he was a totally ordinary kind of guy. He worked all his life as a manual labourer. He liked his daily trip to the bookmakers and the pub. He was a very funny guy and a very wonderful uncle. But at the same time, yes, he had this really quite hidden life as a painter that we didn't discover the full extent of until the very end of his life. We didn't realize just how much work he'd produced and of what quality until he was in his 80s.
Wow. And were you able to therefore ask him why he'd kept this hidden, why he hadn't wanted to tell people and show his work?
Well, he never spoke to me about I knew that he painted because he'd taken over the front room of he lived with my grandparents all his life, and he'd taken over their front room it was a little council house in Warrington where he lived. He'd taken over their front room as his painting room. But I never saw him, in all the time I was in the house, I never saw him working in there, and he never spoke to me about it. So in a way, no, I really didn't get a chance to speak to him about his work, because I only came to appreciate how much he'd done. I mean, really, if I'm honest, after his death, my dad began to sort of uncover all his work shortly before he died. But it was really after his death in 2018 that I saw all of his work and realized how much he'd done and really realized how good he was, actually.
Yeah.
So sadly, I regret that I never got to tell him how good I thought his work was, and really speak to him about it.
Yeah, well, this is a lovely tribute. So where did he keep all this work? I mean, 500-odd paintings sounds like a lot.
Yeah, I mean, in some ways, it's a bit of a mystery that defies the laws of physics, because none of the when you went into his house, which wasn't, it was a small house, none of his paintings were on the walls. I think there was one, if I remember rightly, there was one of his paintings that my grandparents had halfway up the stairs. You would see, I saw some of them in his painting room. The door to his painting room would always be just slightly ajar. And you could see some of the boards stacked up in there. But I felt like I'd only ever seen, I don't know, maybe 20 or 30 boards stacked up in there at most. But we, at the end of his life, when my dad began to convince my uncle to let him start cataloguing his work, he realized then it was in the upstairs bedrooms, I suppose areas of the house that we'd never been in, or we hadn't been in for years or longer. And then after he died, as my parents were clearing out his house, they realized actually it was just everywhere. It was in, you know, it was behind wardrobes. It was in the cupboard under the stairs. It was in he had paintings in the shed and even stuffed in compost bags in an old the remains of an old air raid shelter in his garden. So at that point, we realized every corner of the house was kind of had a stash of artwork in it.
Amazing. And what kind of things did he paint? It sounds like a real variety of things.
He painted the world around him. He painted the world he lived in, working class life in, you know, I guess the industrial north of England. So the street scenes with the factories in the background and the pubs and the clubs that he haunted. And he also painted... he did a lot of paintings of kind of of circus life and theatre land. The places that he frequented, you know, the people that he rubbed shoulders with, they were his, that was his muse, you know, if you like.
Yeah. And one of the things you talk about, which really sort of touched me and made me feel a bit sad, you asked the question whether he'd ever experienced love when he painted it so beautifully.
Well, yeah, in all the time that I knew my uncle, he was single. You know, he'd never been in a long-term relationship. He'd never had a family of his own, and he'd never left home. So and it seemed like it must have always been the way. But yes, that journey, which became a chapter in the book, really started with, you know, I noticed in one of his paintings, a painting of a kind of jazz club, there were, you know, he'd painted these couples in the foreground, and I felt that he'd sort of painted two quite distinct stages, I guess, of romance, falling in love, the first glance and then, you know, the deep adoring gaze, I think I say in the book. And it suddenly struck me, I thought, he must have known this feeling. You know, I couldn't believe he'd painted it so well without living it himself. So that kind of sent me on a journey back into his past, you know, decades before I knew him, before I was around, to a time when he had experienced love in the distant past.
So he had then, presumably your dad could have helped you with that, knowing.
Yeah, my dad sort of said, well, you know, Eric, he didn't tell you too much, you know, he didn't give too much away.
Surprising.
But my dad said, I think there was, you know, I know there was this lady that they'd been on holiday together on a weekend. My dad and Eric had been on holiday together, like a weekend away in Paris. And my dad said, yes, he met someone there. They'd been on like a package trip in the 60s. So then I began searching for this, you know, this lost love. It was a huge shock. It was a huge shock for me to think of him, to learn that he'd had that experience, because it was just nothing I'd ever witnessed in my life. But yes, it was one of, I suppose, a number of things in kind of researching the book that were a surprise to find out.
Yeah, it's a funny thing with family, isn't it? Because when you're growing up, your family, you only know what you know, and your family, right, yeah, and what they go through is normal to you, because it's just what you know. And it's only, yes, when you share some of these stories with other people that people go, oh really, what, he lived with his mum for, yeah, his whole life, you know, but, yeah, to you that, yeah, that was just normal, but to other people there's questions.
Well, this is it, you know, we don't think about our kind of older relatives, we sort of don't imagine their existence before yes, we were around. It's, you know, it's terrible, you know, we've seen a few old photographs, but it doesn't quite seem real. So I think that was, yeah, a big part of the mission with the book was I wanted to find out what had, you know, my uncle was such a kind of complex and fascinating character, really. And of course, to me, that he was the way he was. But I realized, well, he must have had experiences that made him this way. You know, there must have been things in the past that formed his character. So that was a big part of my mission in the book.
Yeah. And it's also interesting how we view art. There's a fabulous quote from Jarvis Cocker for your book that, again, really made me smile. He says, "A timely reminder that art did not originate as an investment opportunity or a get-rich-quick scheme, but as a way for human beings to make sense of their lives." I love that.
Yeah, I think that's, well, I think, you know, Jarvis has hit the nail on the head. It's, yeah, that's perfect, really, because I think that, you know, obviously that was the role of art in my uncle's life. And it's easy to forget that that is the point of making art, you know, and that's all it was really in his life, because it was a very private passion, basically, you know. Most of what he did, the vast majority of his work, only he saw it, remained hidden. But I think, I suppose, yeah, the more I thought about the way he was, and, you know, once I realised, you know, all this work he'd produced, I realised, well, yes, that must have been a hugely sustaining thing for him in his life, that he was producing this artwork. I think it was a kind of compulsion for him. I think it must be, if you can sustain that kind of creative practice for so long. Mm. And I think it just must have been, yeah, the way that he sort of made sense of his life, you know.
Yeah, very much so. It can be really powerful to have a creative outlet like that. And there must be a difference producing art in whatever form it is when you're producing it commercially, if you're doing it specifically for money, that you know that it's a paid project, compared to doing it because you just love doing it.
Well, I think that's true. I mean, I work as a scriptwriter, and that's my job, and that's wonderful, you know, and I'm very grateful to do it. But it does also change. You don't, you know, no one starts out, you start out doing creative work because you love it.
Yeah.
And you know, I was like, well, I want to do that as my work. But when you do it as your work, it does change your relationship to it, you know, and it kind of made me think, yeah, in some ways there's something to be said for, I mean, of course, for my uncle, because really of his class, and he experienced a complete dearth of opportunities in his life. So he didn't really have any choice but to practice his art, not commercially, as it were. But there is an advantage to that. He did in his work exactly what he wanted to. He just followed his nose, and he never produced a commission, or, you know, his art is just exactly what he wished to express. And I can see, you know, from knowing my uncle, I can see him completely in his work. He managed to transfer that sense of himself completely to the canvas, which is, you know, for a man with absolutely no education in art, I thought was very impressive.
Oh, definitely. And there's something so beautiful and natural and raw and real about that. If you are producing something, whether it's art or a script or whatever, for a song, for other people, there's a lot to think about. You're constantly going to be questioning, is this funny, or will people like that, or will people think that that's the wrong shape, or will they think I should have done that a different color? You know, you've got to question how it's going to be received. But if you're not thinking about the fact that anyone might ever see it, it's just so natural and pure, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's it. I mean, it's kind of like, I mean, I suppose all creative work, in a way, you have to do it for yourself. It's a strange thing, and in a way, that's, I'm paraphrasing. This is, I think, Rick Rubin in his book The Creative Act said, you know, the best thing you can do for the audience is to make the work for yourself. And yeah, in a sense, because my uncle had no choice, because he wasn't, I don't think he imagined his work really ever having an audience. He just was doing that, you know. He was just making the work for himself, and, you know, that's kind of the best thing you can do. It's the most honest. As you say, yeah, it's the most honest reflection of who you are and how you see the world.
Mm, definitely. And it makes his art, I think, that much more beautiful and impressive because of that, I think.
Yes, I think so. I think so, yeah.
So people have seen it now. There's been some recognition from arts, yes, art critics and galleries and everything, which is wonderful, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Yes, no, it's amazing. I mean, that all began because we not long after he died in 2018, we put on an exhibition of his work in his house. We did that because we'd kind of, right at the end of his life, he'd sort of tentatively said to my dad, "Oh, I would have liked to have had an exhibition of my work." Typical of my uncle to only think to say that about 85, you know. So we'd kind of promised him we would put on an exhibition of his work. And in the end, really, we thought, well, where can we do it? And his house actually seemed the obvious choice. And that was the beginning, really, of his public life as an artist. And everything that's happened, I mean, this is in the book, so I won't divulge it too much, but really everything that's happened, including the response to that and everything that's happened since, at no stage could we have dreamt of any of it happening, really, nor I think could my uncle. It's just been it's been an incredible journey to behold, and a wonderful thing to see his work finally get, get a public viewing.
Yeah. And it's funny, my initial reaction to that is how sad that he didn't see people reacting to his work. But then the kind of person that he obviously was, maybe it's the perfect way that it happened. You know what I mean? Because if he was that bothered about people seeing it, he would have exhibited his work years ago.
Yes, I mean, that's a question that I sort of try to answer in my book. And it's a really difficult one, because I think my uncle was coming from a place where, I really think it was so impossible for him to imagine he could be an artist in a kind of, in the way, with any public recognition. I think it was so difficult for him to imagine that might be possible. It's kind of hard to know. Well, did he sort of secretly want that, or was he quite indifferent? Which, if I'm honest, to me, he did seem that way. He seemed, fairly indifferent about people seeing his work, or even sometimes downright opposed to it, because he was quite cagey around his paintings and sort of like quite protective of them. But I think, I think deep down, of course, and in some ways it's obvious, I think, of course, he wanted his work to be seen.
Yeah. Well,
impossible for him to achieve in life, but yeah, he's managed it in death at least.
Well, I'm sure he's looking down with great pride at you for producing the book and you and your father exhibiting his work, and also hopefully looking down at his work and being proud of what he achieved as well.
Yes, I hope so. I'm sure he is. I'm sure he'd have a few opinions on how we're not exactly doing it right, but yes, I think he would be looking down on the whole, amazed and pleased at what's happened.
Yeah, lovely. Well, if people want to read the lovely story, it's called The Secret Painter, and it's available on our website, tre.radio. It's by Joe Tucker, who we've been chatting with. Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much, Hannah. Thank you.